Welcome to the Talentopoly Podcast. You're listening to episode 24, and tonight we're going to be talking about web tours with jQuery plugins, JavaScript libraries, and the like. We're also going to be talking about web fonts. And I'm Jared Brown, and I'm joined by...
Hi.
Hi, Brandon.
I'm Brandon Corbin.
The Corbinizer.
The Corbinizer at Corbinizer.com.
Trademark.
Trademark SM RB element OP. You know, I have about 2,000 downloaders of the Corbinizer.
Really? Mm-hmm. What's the Corbinizer's your to-do list thing?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's a piece of paper that you print. Amazing. 2,000 people use it religiously.
Or at least used it at one time.
Then I keep track of repeats. I've probably downloaded from that damn site 60 times.
Nice. I downloaded from it about 1,800 times.
Shut up.
So that makes up the rest of it pretty much right there.
It's my giving back to the world.
Before we get into our topics here, which I'm excited to talk about these tonight, and I've been doing some research, so we'll get into this in a minute. Let's talk about what we're drinking.
All righty.
Surprise us tonight, Brandon.
Today I am drinking 337. It's a Cabernet 2008 from someplace in Italy, I think.
I don't have
the bottle with me. I have my one gigantic, because it's so big, it's like a glacier wine glass that literally can hold a bottle of wine. And so I just do.
Is that like a margarita fishbowl style thing?
It is. Well, and it's actually really nice looking. It's just it's super girthy. It's just like, and it's a great. So yeah, I pretty much fill it up and go through a half a bottle of wine during the show.
It's convenient as long as it doesn't get too warm. But otherwise, sounds like
listen to that. You hear that? That is such a God. It's a nice. I had two until Emily dropped one. I think she did it on purpose because she has to wash these by hand.
Mm. Yeah.
What are you drinking?
I picked up some unfiltered wheat beer from Boulevard Brewing Company.
Ooh, it's got chunks of bread in it.
Yeah. Some rat turds in here, totally unfiltered.
Oh, yeah. He's kidding. We don't want to get sued.
Probably some rust from the inside of the tank that they were using. Tastes
good. Is it good?
Put some hair on you. No, it's good. It's a good wheat beer. I recommend it. They've been in business since 1989, so you've been brewing beer that long. Wait, that's not that long. So, yeah, but it is pretty good.
Good. I don't eat wheat.
I drink it.
You know, I haven't had any meat in the last 2.5 weeks.
Really?
Yep.
Interesting. Why?
Yeah. Just as I've gotten older... my body has decided not to care for the consumption of it. So I've decided to see what happens if I stop eating it for, you know, a couple months. And so far I feel amazing.
Good.
Yeah.
The Corbinizer is getting stronger.
It's getting more powerful.
So I am recording from a different location tonight. I didn't tell you this before we started, but I'm down in my bar, the bar in the basement.
Why?
Because my 2-year-old son has decided as of 2 nights ago that he wants to start sleeping in his big boy bed, which his bedroom, not his nursery, is on the first floor. So that kind of put the kibosh on recording over in my office area, because I don't have doors in that office. It's just open in the family room. So to be more quiet, I am down here in the bar room. And, you know, as I was setting up tonight, I was thinking, why haven't I been down here sooner? Why, like, this is the perfect place to be recording. I've got my beers right here. So while you're droning on about something about halfway through the podcast, I can just go up and get myself a little beer. I'm sitting here, like, in my sweats. I'm Zuckerberged out with my Asics sandals on. It's like, this is awesome. I'm just lounging down here.
You need to have a comfortable place that's quiet, that you won't get interrupted.
Mm-hmm. It works, and I close the doors and everything, so maybe the acoustics will actually come out better. We'll see.
It does. It sounds a little less echoey.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
Super. Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Got some quick site news I want to go over. We have a Chrome extension now, which is amazing. It's essentially the bookmarklet.
Did you build it?
I did. Guess how long it took me to build?
How long?
About about 20 minutes. That may be overestimating. I found on Hacker News, it was so serendipitous because I had just finished the bookmarklet the day before, and I knew I wanted to just get a Chrome extension out there and play with that Chrome web store and kind of a nice way to see the number of users that this thing would have, because I don't have any easy way of telling how many people use the bookmarklet right now. So I on Hacker News, I logged on that morning, and boom, here's a generate a Chrome extension from your bookmarklet in like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. So I did that, and all you do is just supply an icon graphic, a title, description, and your JavaScript that your bookmarklet uses, and it gives you a little zip file that you download, and you're off and running. And it was really painless to get in the Chrome web store. I mean, you know, the Google way is that, just like with Android, there's really no permission to be in the store. So I put it up there, and 5 minutes later, people were downloading it.
Was it literally, were you getting downloads 5 minutes later?
Probably not. Are you bullshitting not. Me? Okay. It looks like it updates nightly anyway. So it said 0 users that whole time. And then the next morning it said 16. I think I'm up to 24, maybe 30 by now. So it's not.
So would you say, though, that I mean, you could probably come up with a couple different, you know, ideas for, you know, a Chrome extension to then use that as a means of driving traffic?
Yeah, and this is probably not a great experiment because this is so selective, the type of person that would really want this thing. But, yeah, it'd be interesting to see if there was something more general. I don't know what that would be. But, yeah, I think it's really interesting to create extensions and apps and stuff that go into these other marketplaces to drive traffic back to your main website. I think there is something to that.
I might have to actually play around with that.
You should. It was really easy to do. It was nice. And they host it and everything. We're building a Safari extension, and by we, I mean Nick Peelman, who is an awesome member of Talentopoly, and he's got some time on his hands right now. So he came up with he created an extension for Safari quickly that just was the bookmarklet, but I have the beta for Talentopoly in closed beta right now, and so I gave him access to that, and he's actually building a really kick-ass Safari extension that uses the API, and it's not using the bookmarklet. So it's a really custom experience, and it's coming along nicely.
Wow.
Yeah, so hopefully that... I've got a couple of people using the API now. It's exciting, but it's also tough because they'll have requests and like, hey, you're not returning the right status code for this thing, and you know, I've kind of got to get on that, and it's like having customers. It's a weird experience. All right, let's get...
Awesome. Sorry. I had... I had to have one of my assistants bring me in a new battery for my e-cigarette because I realized I just ran out, and I'm like, this is not good. So I'm sitting there, and Maddie, my daughter, is sitting there getting her bag ready for school tomorrow, and I'm like, would you go give me one of these?
Yeah, that's great.
I feel bad doing it, but hey,
we gotta do video sometime and check out this e-cigarette thing.
I just, as I'm surrounded in a sea of mist.
Yes, and your awesome broadcast style microphone on the boom arm, and it looks pretty pimp. It's like old style.
Hell yeah, I love this arm. I can move it all around and really don't hear it, and that's the best part.
Yeah.
Except for when I hit it, I right now I've got it so it's all super low, and it's like that I can actually see above it, and I keep hitting it with my arm.
It's no good, man. Let's get into this here.
All right.
So let's talk about website tours.
Yeah.
And what I mean by this is just those, you know, not a whole lot of websites, I guess, do this, but Facebook and Meetup are some of the most prominent ones. And it's, you know, when you first sign in or you click help on a page and it actually comes up with this little box and it's like pointing to, you know, maybe it's pointing to what it's talking about. And you click next, and step through this tour of the website. So why do you think, is there a good reason to ever use a website tour? Do you like these things? Do you use them ever?
No, I don't. And the first thing I'm doing, I usually will maybe look at that first screen and then figure out how the hell to close the thing. Because, you know, for me, I like to get in there and get my hands dirty. Now, I do think, though, that there is a it really started when Twitter started publishing the kinds of numbers that they had. So like in this case, I view, like, when you first sign up with Twitter, you go through now their new process of you got to follow at least 5 people. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to do this.
Like a checklist.
Kind of, Yeah, but it's a checklist, but it also kind of takes you through the different metaphors that Twitter uses. You know, following people, you know, doing your first tweet, things like that. Now, I find it absolutely obnoxious just because I create a lot of Twitter accounts. But they do have the, you know, skip this step shit. But so I think that you can – if it's a great way, because then the final thing is always invite your friends. And that's the piece that you start really adding to that viral coefficient, right? Where now, boom, the last step is, hey, now tell all your friends about our product. And even if you get, you know, them just doing two of them, that can really help. So I think they've got their benefits. I don't care for them myself, just because the way I look at it is if you, right when I get there, I can't figure it out, then it's not usable enough.
Right.
But that's the anecdotal, right? I mean, the fact of the matter is you could have an application that's 10 years old and you need to help people get through it. So why not do kind of a tour just for those first times? So I think they definitely could have their benefit. And if you use them right, you could probably, you know, help really increase your overall adoption and the sharing of your product.
I think so. Yeah. I think it's hard for us to really see the value because we see so many websites, so many web apps. And so we can pick up a new web app real quick.
Mm-hmm.
But we also, I think developers and designers, IT folks are pretty easily will underestimate the difficulty of learning one of these web apps. If you were to have your mom or your grandma come and see Facebook for the first time, it could be daunting.
Mm-hmm. I'll always go back to that. If you're building a new app and you have your grandma actually go through it, yeah, do it, right? I mean, have the old people go through your site, and then you'll really start finding out, okay, what's important and what's not. So I do have kind of a love-hate relationship with the whole concept of the tour. But my question is now to you, which is obviously, have you been thinking about doing one of these for Talentopoly?
I actually have one for Talentopoly. I've had it up there for, let's see now, probably 8 months. Maybe you joined before it was put up there.
Yeah. I've definitely been around for longer than 8 months.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's up there. I don't track
any. You don't track anything?
I don't track any metrics on it. Oh. I'm really bad about that.
Yeah, you need to do that. You're tracking with Google Analytics, right?
Yeah.
So you just, with like two lines of JavaScript, you could then trigger each time they click next, you could trigger a...
The other thing I was thinking of doing is using something more along the StatsD line and Instrumental app and plugging some of that in there. I think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I would think that for those types of things, that's part of your analytics, right? That's how effective is the market, you know, not marketing, but because I have
like
those anytime I've got a static website or a JavaScript website. I'll do that where I'll trigger it both in Google Analytics and get clicky just to really be able to see what's going on. So I have that all in one spot where I think Instrumental app or StatsD, you know, is more for logins or shit like that. And I guess it kind of depends on what your tour is.
Right. Yeah, my tour is, so you come in, you fill out the edit screen, and when you get presented with your profile, that's when the little thing pops up saying you can hit start or you can hit close. So I make it optional.
And then can I ask a question?
You certainly can.
What the ability to upload? You have the ability to upload a physical resume, right?
I do. Yes.
Do you do anything? Any parsing?
No, I don't, because here's what I do. So I use Scribd or Scribd. I don't know best pronunciation of that. They're great because they give you 50,000 documents for free that you can host privately with them. This is all for free.
Yeah.
So it's those documents, you can set them to be public or private. If they're private, they're not going to show up on their website. So I love that. These resumes that get uploaded, they aren't going to show up anywhere but on Talentopoly. And I don't have to worry about any of it. And they accept so many different formats. It's like whatever you wrote your resume in, I pretty much guarantee that you can upload it to Talentopoly, and it's going to look just the same as when you in that native file format.
Yeah. So, now, are you using the JavaScript API or are you using
still using the Swift, the Flash. I need to switch that over to the HTML5 version that they have.
And that's to call it, you're still just using their JavaScript. You're not doing it on the server side, right?
It is putting it into it's injecting the HTML that loads the Swift right into the HTML. Then it gets served up to, you know, it gets served up to the browser with that Swift file location already in it.
Yeah. And that's what I mean, because they also have one behind the scenes where you can kind of ping their service to go pick up this file and start processing it. And because I'm actually – that's what I'm in right now, where I'm housing resumes and transcripts and all this stuff. And so I've actually went the route of – I'll call it Scribed. And so that's interesting. Okay, cool. There you go.
That was the only reason – I use a Rails gem, which is a little bit outdated now, and I'll have to switch off that and – do a little bit more, and that, you know, it's not a huge part of the site right now, so that's why that's kind of lagged behind.
Why do you need a Rails gem for like 10 lines of JavaScript?
It's using the Flash, and at the time that I think that's all they had at the time was the Flash. This goes back to even before Talentopoly is what it currently is today.
Yeah, but the JavaScript one still would render, I mean, would ultimately write out the object code for the Swift, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's just
probably. Okay, that was stupid.
What?
No, I'm just nothing. Nothing. Move on. No other questions, sir. Thank you.
Let's get back onto the web tours.
Yeah, sorry.
So I think the idea of having it help work with the help file is kind of cool too, because who wants to write a bunch of documentation out for their web app? You know, and if you're doing something for a client, it's a big project, and maybe they're paying you to do some help documentation. I actually have a few projects like this, and I actually have one going on right now where part of the statement of work is write some documentation for the help file. And I don't want to go through and write documentation that's going to change and, you know, take screenshots. And I don't think people want to read that stuff anyway. So I'm going to be writing all this documentation nobody's ever going to read. The tour seemed like such a better way to do the help file.
But what happens when we have to add whole new sections? Is there...
Well, you do several tours. I mean, you could have a whole library of tours. So if you add new sections, then you would have to at some point create some new tours for those new sections.
Yeah. And which one are you
thinking? I lost you there. What were you saying, Brandon?
Which one were you thinking about going with on the tours out of these, you know, I guess we'll get there, right?
Yeah. Okay. Let's jump into that. This is a good time to jump into it. So there are a couple that I looked at. The Code Canyon had some pretty good ones. They had a pretty good list on there.
$7? Come on.
For what?
I'm just kidding. $9.
For the jQuery tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I started looking at... I looked at the jQuery tour. I looked at Guidely. They have the JTour, which is Website Tour Engine. That was about it. I was surprised by how few libraries there are out there. Are you still with me, Brandon?
I am. I'm actually going through this jQuery tour right now.
Yeah, so let's talk about that one.
I guess for $7, it's what you need. It's kind of freaking me out right now. It's going through and spotlighting different things and keyboard navigations, and it's all automatic. I honestly would be very curious to see a usability study done with this, to see what people actually think about all of this madness that's happening on my screen right now. Right. I'm having tooltips pop up and my screen is just scrolling up and down. It's going all fucking smooth crazy on me.
It's got smooth scrolling.
Yeah, but now, see, I'm trying to scroll, and it's like, no, you're not going to, oh, holy crap. So,
well, yeah, don't get off, you know, keep your arms and legs inside at all times, so you're going to get hurt when you're doing the tour.
Yeah, I'm not sold. I mean, again, I think it all kind of comes down to how hard is this to implement.
Right.
Have you tried to do it with any of these?
Yes, and the good news is this is incredibly simple stuff to implement. You basically will just create your JavaScript file, and you know, the only painstaking part of it is just setting up, like writing out what you want each one to say. But then you're just going to say, you know, use selectors to say, I want you to point to this now, I want you to point to that, and I want you to do it in this order. And that's all incredibly simple to do with all of these. That's the good news.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if somebody can come up with a web tour that's doesn't require you to, you know, and I know that they don't require you to, but there's a better way for you to really not have to write out any sentences. I don't know what the solution there is. You know, you've got the title, but like some cooler ways to show some of that. I think there's something that could be done there.
You know, I personally like video. You know, like what Google just released when they're talking about the new user feature of Chrome, where you could have multiple users, right? They had just a really super simplistic video that was like, click here, click here, click here, click here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the problem with video is that it's, you know, composite, and then it gets outdated fairly quickly. You know, I'll tell you a trick that I used to do when I was building the corporate software is I would use the classic question mark next to different things. And so I literally made just a JavaScript function that I could just put this this question mark next to virtually anything, and I would give it a name, right? So I'm looking at this jQuery, so percentage callbacks, right? And there would just be a question mark next to it. Yep. The first person that clicks it, it would go to the database and see, is there any kind of help text for this? And if not, it would say, oh, I'm sorry, we're still working on getting that help text done.
Is brilliant.
Yes, and it sends an email to me and says, hey, dumbass, go fill out the help text for percent callbacks.
Yes, you're not writing stuff nobody will ever want.
Exactly. So you know exactly what people are really interested in.
I might have to steal that from you.
Because by all means. This is back in 2002.
That's awesome. Yeah, I do like the question mark thing. I've played with these tours a lot, these web tours, and I have one on Talentopoly. But on the projects that they don't say go off and write a whole bunch of help manuals, or that I don't feel like there's a reason to do a web tour, I love just putting that little question mark icon next to the few things I think you might need some help with, and just doing the nice tooltip. You know, like a nicely styled tooltip is good.
Exactly. And now that's exactly probably how it should be done, is that now it would be a tooltip, you roll over it. Literally, that Ajax call would just, you know, go out and it's, oh, shit, it's not there. Send that email and then just say, hey, we're working on it. And then, boom, go and fill out your, you know, wherever it needs to be.
Right. What about having, like, a mode that you could put it in? So instead of having a guided tour, really, it's more of like, all right, we're just going to, all right, sure, you start. And then, boom, these little question mark icons show up next to a bunch of things, and you just hover over and do it however, and then say, okay, I'm done, and turn it off.
Yeah, that would be great. And you could do it all with HTML, and then you'd have just, you know, a super simple JavaScript to be able to handle all the requests.
All right, we were experiencing some technical difficulties there with Skype, i.e. Brandon's internet connection went to hell. So,
we'll leave that up to interpretation.
That's what I'm blaming it on.
Yeah. So as I was saying, that would all be fairly easy to build, and I think we should build it. And actually, I might be building it. I might just sit down tonight and finish building that and add that kind of functionality to the app I'm building.
Please open, like, put it on GitHub, and I will use it too.
Yeah, well, literally, it would, you know, the except for it's going to be in PHP if I do it.
Wah, wah, wah. Why is it not just HTML and JS and some CSS?
Well, because you're still going to need to have a service call, right? You're still going to need to be able to look up, or you're going to need to somehow get hit to a server to be able to send the email say, you know, so that piece. But the JavaScript stuff would be, you know, really easy.
Yeah. That's all I'm saying. The front end parts, if you put that on GitHub, that'd be great.
I forget that. That's hard for people.
Is what?
Just in general, like that, you know, some of the JavaScript stuff that I've now been forced to do for the last 2.5 years is still harder for people just to write it themselves.
Yeah. I mean, you probably get some downloads, and maybe other contributors would come in and, you know, make it robust. That's what I want. I'd like to see something that's kind of maintained and getting better and not getting fat, you know, keep it lean and single purpose, but, you know, it kind of attracts a following, and that can lead to a better thing.
Hey, let me ask you, while we're on the topic of JavaScript, do you know of any hashbang kind of frameworks out there?
No. You mean for a location, like doing fragments?
No. Yeah. In the URL.
Like what Twitter and Lifehacker does?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't.
Because I wrote one called I Love Hash.
That's awesome.
That was probably a year and a half ago now. But yeah, I'm surprised there isn't one out there already.
Oh,
there you go, listeners of Talentopoly. Somebody build it, and we'll promote the hell out of it.
Huge opportunity there. I don't know. I have mixed feelings on that anyway, but
Yeah, I definitely think it completely depends on the instance, right? Now, I don't like the fact that they used it all for like commercial or for consumer facing websites,
right?
But for a lot of the things that I'm doing on these web apps that are completely, you know, isolated to users or to someone else who's paying for the service, where I don't want Google bots and I don't want anybody else poking around in there, I think it has a lot of benefit. And I was like, oh, so I started breaking out mine again, but I was kind of disappointed that no one's built one yet.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you should put that up on GitHub as well.
There you go.
And maybe some Talentopoly members can help be collaborators on it. All right, so let's run through some stuff here with jQuery, Tour, and Guidely. And, you know, let's keep it to that, because I did look at more than those, and I looked through the Code Canyon stuff. You know, I've used – there was a different one that I used for Talentopoly. It was this website tour. I'll put the link up in the podcast show notes. But I wasn't nuts about it, and after looking at a bunch of these, the two that I would recommend to look at are jQuery Tour and Guidely. And you do have to pay for both, but it's so nominal. It's $9 for jQuery Tour and $5 for Guidely. And I don't understand why there's not a good open source thing. It seems like a pretty simple deal. I would have thought somebody would have made something that just kind of is the standard now when you do need to do a web tour, but it doesn't seem to be the case. So here's some of the differences that I saw between jQuery Tour and Guidely. jQuery Tour has multi-page support, which is something I really wish that I had had in the web tour that I used for Talentopoly. Do you know what the multi-page support is, Brandon?
I would assume that it's so I can, you know, have my tour continue through multiple pages within an app.
Seems pretty necessary, I would think, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you'd be surprised. A lot of the lesser libraries, the free ones, don't have that.
They just focus on the content on the current page.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. So, and I think it's, you need to have that ability to step through the pages. So I liked that about jQuery Tour and Guidely. One thing that struck me as I read through the comments and I was looking at the version updates for these two, and Guidely is much newer than jQuery Tour, but the guy at jQuery Tour who's building that, he seemed really responsive to requests, and he's continued to add new stuff to this. So it is actively maintained, and if you talk to him about a certain feature and that feature makes sense to add, he'll probably put it in there. Now, I don't have any real way of looking at the size of this file, but I'm guessing because of the amount of features that it has, it's not the skinniest web tour that you could be implementing.
You're telling me it's fat?
It might be. I don't know. It has a lot of features. So it's not a lean, mean web tour. It's a packs a punch with a lot of features type of web tour. If that's what you're looking for, then go for jQuery Tour, because this thing is the most feature complete of any of the, you know, the ones that I saw. It has this exposure feature that I thought was really neat. So one of the problems I think that these tours have is that even though they are kind of pointing, and this one uses a tooltip style, jQuery does, pointing at what it's talking about, it probably is still, I'm betting that people are like, oh, what am I looking at here? Maybe their eyes are wandering. The exposure feature is just going to blur out everything else. And all you see is exactly what it wants you to see. And that seemed kind of interesting to me. Maybe that's a little overbearing, but I thought it was an interesting feature.
It's a cool feature.
So it has that.
Whereas are correct, sir.
Guidely has numbers. So it puts a whole bunch of numbers, like 1 through 10 or whatever, you number everything. And then you can see quickly what the path is going to be for your tour. So that was kind of interesting,
too. Is the Guidely the one that's – I'm looking at this amberjack.org.
Let's see.
I think.
Let's check out Amberjack.
It's tours provided by Amberjack.
Yes. Modal. Yeah.
This thing is ugly as shit.
It is. It doesn't.
Is atrocious.
Uh huh. It's free.
It's free, and they have really awful skins that you can install that you can have one that looks like Safari.
Yep.
Oh, this thing is nasty.
Yeah, this is not one that I would recommend.
I'm glad you included it in the show notes.
You fell into my trap. So. Guidely and jQuery Tour. jQuery Tour is the more full-featured one. Guidely is the newer kid on the block, and it's got the numbers assigned to the different points on the tour, which is neat. And I'd say jQuery Tour and Guidely have the best aesthetics. Maybe Guidely pulls out ahead a little bit there in looking the best. So check those out. You'll spend less than $10 to buy either one of them. The wish list, I kind of put together a quick wish list. If I were to build one of these web tours, and I love the idea that we just came up with of having, you know, you start the tour, but then it pops all those question marks up or whatever the icons are. I think that's a great idea. I would much rather do that now that we've talked about that than the web tours anyway. But the quick wish list for these things is give the option to start the tour. You don't want to just jump right into it. Span multiple pages. Allow them to go out of turn. I think that's a big one. And with, you know, the numbers that Guidely has is kind of cool. Smooth scroll. So as you're moving around the page, if you're moving out of outside of the viewable area, smoothly scroll down to it. Hit play and relax was one that I thought that jQuery Tour showed me and how it just autoplays. I didn't like how it just started autoplaying, but it might be cool to have the option to say play versus walk through it.
Sure.
Looks good, of course, which is hard to come by in most of these. And then points at or is clear what it is pointing at, which a lot of them weren't.
Which is kind of surprising.
Oh, and jQuery Tour had fantastic documentation, whereas Guidely did not. So there's one other differentiator. So I think we beat that one to death. You want to move on to web fonts?
Let's do it.
All right. So let's talk about font face in CSS. And we're going to be talking about Google Web Fonts, Typekit, all of that stuff. And I figured a good place to start is kind of the history of how font face and how font support worked its way into web standards.
And I assume you've done your research.
Somewhat. I will preface all of this by saying that I have not used font face personally, whereas I think you have, right, Brandon?
I have. I have.
So you're ahead of me there.
Okay.
So I can read. I'm good at that. I've done some
reading. I can copy and paste.
And together, we're the ultimate team. So here's a little bit of history here. And like, this is the really high-level history. It's basically, as everybody knows, with CSS 1, fonts were really limited. You had to choose font families that the browser already would have had access to on the user's computer. So if the user didn't have it installed, they're not going to be able to view it on your web page. So you get this whole long list of font families, you know, the usual list, Arial, Helvetica, Sans Serif, all that stuff. And that was CSS 1. I was surprised in doing the research that font face was something that was added quite a while ago in CSS 2.
Yeah.
Actually, IE 4 and 5 supported font face.
Well, dude, IE 5 was like the most advanced web browser ever.
Right. It's the one I still use.
Uh-huh.
So font face has been around for a long time, but why have we not been doing custom fonts until the last couple of years?
Because all the good browsers didn't support it.
Well, no, Firefox 3.6 and higher, Safari 3.1 and higher, Chrome 4 and higher.
Shit, licensing.
Yes, that is the answer right there, is licensing. And it's because you could not find a good font that was affordable to be able to use over font face.
Yep.
That's what held it back right there.
Yep.
So, yeah, sure, we've had it for a long time, but what are you going to feed it? Well, now there's this whole industry of fonts, everything from free all the way up to some pretty expensive fonts that you can license to use on the web. And they come in all different formats. So you've got, they have a whole bunch of these formats that are, three in particular, are meant to stop you from being able to copy these fonts. Because that's the other problem with font face that has made a lot of the font foundries really nervous, especially when it was first came out and first got introduced in CSS2, was that it lets you freely download that entire font, the entire font, straight to your computer. Now you have it. You have the bits that make it up. You could do whatever you want with that now. Sure, they could attach a license to it, but it's in no way DRM'd. So they do have some of these font files that do these file types that try to stop you from doing some of that, like TrueDoc, the embeddable open type, which is the one that Microsoft pushes, and Web Open Font Format are formats that are designed to address that issue of how you're downloading these fonts. But TrueType, I would say, is the predominant one that people want to use.
Yeah.
So what types of services give you these fonts, and TrueType fonts especially? And Google entered the scene a little bit later. Typekit was already out and making waves, and then Google came onto the scene.
What about Crouton?
Crouton, what is that?
crouton was like the was the Flash text replacement, and that was really the first way that we started having kind of cross platform. And this was early. I mean, I should say this is probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, didn't Typekit use Flash in the beginning?
They did, and I think Crouton was the and I don't know if Crouton was a brand or like an approach to doing it,
right?
This was before TrueType TypeKit. And
why were they doing it for the DRM aspect?
Well, no, it made it so it was completely cross browser as long as you had Flash installed.
It doesn't seem that hard to do cross browser as long as you have an EOT, a TTF, and maybe one or two other versions of that font.
Well, see, but that's the thing, right? Is that encoding of the different fonts, you know, those services didn't exist that made it really easy for us to take a TrueType font and convert it to all the different formats.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of like how Flash with video is, where, mm-hmm. you know, if Flash would just make it work on all browsers versus me having to do the MP4 for Safari or the, the video MD and all that shit. Crouton, but it sucked. I mean, it was heavy. It was a fat. And then you definitely had a flicker too. But anyway, mm-hmm. sorry.
Oh no, that's great. I remember seeing Typekit back when they were doing Flash and not wanting anything to do with that.
Yeah.
You know, custom fonts are cool, but I don't need them that badly.
Exactly. And I think that's what most people, what you really need to ask yourself is, how badly do I need this? You know, is it really going to help my users achieve their tasks more efficiently? And is it really going to help reinforce my brand? And if the answer is no, then don't waste your fucking time with it.
Right. And you're way ahead of me there, because that's what I want to lead up to. If you look in the show notes there, Brandon, you'll see that finally we get to why and are we, you know, when do you use these things? But that's, you're right on about that. So let's talk about the Google Web Font service a little bit, because I think that was the first service that came in. Typekit was really making waves, but Google Fonts came in and it's free.
Yes.
And so that makes it immediately approachable to everybody. And
Lobster is the new Comic Sans.
Nice. Yeah, so free fonts also equals a ton of trash that you have to root through.
You really do, man. There's probably like 7 or 8 fonts that are really worth. I mean, most fonts honestly are not worthwhile when it's coming to the website or when it comes to your the websites, but
right.
I digress, whatever.
Oh, yeah. First off, and this is something I was really curious about. Let's get into exactly how this works. How does Google Fonts work? If you look at it, you include a CSS file. Did you see that in there?
Yep. Oh yeah, I use them a lot. I should say I go through and I copy and paste a lot, and then I go to the website. And I'm like, man, fuck it. I'm going to Helvetica New, man. That's it.
Yep. What it's doing is some browser detection there. With that CSS, which is really cool, it's serving up via CSS entirely. It's serving up the correct font over font face to you, but you don't have to worry about any of that because you just include that CSS ? Boom, the font family that you want, and it's going to handle serving your users' browsers the correct font faces. So. That's in a nutshell how it's working. Is it's just kind of a intermediate to pulling in the correct CSS snippet.
Well, that's what's interesting is, so I'm looking at it. I'm looking at Tangerine right now on Google Fonts, and so it's using the local, where it's defining local as Tangerine, and then the URL for it is all those, you know, full URL to Google's content delivery network, and it's the web open file format, whatever the font format, WOFF.
Yep.
And so that's in Firefox. Let's see what happens when we do it in Chrome. Chrome is still OFF. And let's see what happens with Android. Oh, shit. Are you still there?
I'm still here. Did you almost close it out?
I'm running Android in virtual machine, and my mouse is officially gone. Mm. Oh, shit. There we go. Got it back. All right. I'm not going to check that in Android. So yeah, that's interesting, and that's literally just the tag that you include. Where I've seen others that include every single one. So do you think it's detecting it at that CSS call?
Yes.
So
it is doing detection on that.
That is, because a lot of times what I've seen is people using the at font face declaration, you know, it has all of the different file formats.
Yep. And that's what this is. This is why it's a little bit easier to use the Google Web font service, because you just say, hey, I want this font. And it's going to make sure that each browser is going to be able to have that font so that you can reliably use it as a font family elsewhere in your CSS files.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's pretty, that's a really slick delivery method. And so when I first saw that, I wanted to know, how does that work? That's great. Because I expected it was just purely a JavaScript thing, and it's not. It's doing it over CSS. So then we start looking at, okay, this web fonts loader that it has. So if you want to get more specific in that simple method, which, by the way, is the fastest method that you can use. It is going to be faster than using the web fonts API event. That CSS method is great, but you need to get more custom. You're going to pull in a bunch of fonts. You don't want to have to specify all those lines. You know, you want to do it in JavaScript. So that web font loader is a good way to do this. And the web font loader comes with the added advantage that it was made in collaboration with Typekit. So you're going to be able to also pull in those Typekit fonts as well. So it's kind of a cool way to, like, all right, you've got a couple of free ones, maybe one or two free ones that you want on your site, and you've got that one you pay for through Typekit. Boom, they're all on the site together using one font loader. I thought that was really neat.
That's very neat, Jared.
I got excited.
I'm sorry. I just cannot get excited about. So I come from a print background back in the 90s, right? Uh-huh. And I had, you know, 2,500 fonts or whatever it was. My dad owned a print shop, so I had access to them. But I didn't pay for fonts back then. I'm not going to pay for fonts now. And most of these look like shit when it comes to reading a lot of text on the mm-hmm. page. So I've really seen one yet other than the one that I use, other than the one web font that I use, that has any real benefit to the end user. And you know, it's sorry, I don't know. I just don't see the need for them.
I'm kind of with you, and like I was saying in the beginning of this, I haven't gotten into any of this on my websites.
Yeah. Well, no, all the, you can hear this. All the designers right now. You can hear Steven. The you bloody hell. You know, that the font really can give your design a whole lot of unique kind of style. It's going to be SEO friendly. You still sure. really get all of this branding power and
smaller
blah, blah, blah,
than
blah,
an
blah.
Image.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm not sold on it. But again, and until it's because just looking at this tangerine, this one font style of normal, font weight of normal, right? How often? I mean, I would say that I use a font with bold more often than not. That I'm looking mm-hmm. at 26K just for this one standard font size.
That brings up a very good point. So how can we make that smaller? And there are a couple of ways. One way is you can do a subset. So you can say, well, I just want the bold version.
Well, no, but I know that's what I'm saying is that 26K just for the normal.
Right. Well, here's how you can make it even smaller. And I think these custom fonts are really good for logos and for the SEO reason and because they're going to be smaller than an image for your logo. And I think they can
Bullshit.
Be really...
I could make my logo smaller in 26K.
Well, not if you do text equals. And this supports text equals. So then what text equals is going to do... So we could say text equals talentopoly, and it's just going to send over, it's going to create a font that only has the characters in it for the text that I've specified.
And who's going to do that?
It will just do it.
Google?
Yes. It will just do that for you on the fly and cache it.
Okay, I'm calling your bullshit. And text equals Brandon, or no, and text equals Jared lies.
Ha ha.
There it is. All right. Let's see
what happens. What the size is.
We download this bitch.
And it's not going to have all the characters in the character map.
4.2K.
There you go.
I still make a smaller logo image than 4.2K.
Well, it depends
Thank
on
you
the
very
size.
Much.
Depends on the size.
I just said Jared lies. It's 1, 2, 3, 4,
well,
5,
how big
6.
Of it? This was gonna. That was gonna be a 500 by 1,000 logo. I mean, I don't play small when I do logos.
Oh shit! Make the logo bigger, please.
So all anyway, right. that's pretty small.
So the text equals is that's fine until next thing, you know, I go and I say, why the hell is this font not working? Because I have more than Jared right. Wise in my text.
Yep. But for like a splash page, a grabber page, a logo, that type of thing could work pretty well. And that's going to be pretty small. Now, here's something I found interesting when I was going through the technical considerations for Google Web Fonts. So if you use the JS Web Font Loader, which has some more bells and whistles, but it's a little bit slower and it's got some drawback. Whereas if you use these web fonts, and this surprised me, if you use the font face in Firefox, you're going to get what they call a flash of unstyled text, where you can clearly see that when you first load up that page, that it didn't have that custom font applied. Like a couple milliseconds later, like a couple hundred milliseconds later, it's going to apply that font style to it. But it does create a noticeable flash. You can definitely see it. You know what
it's
I'm talking about,
it's
right?
called the hitch at the my hitch. Old job, because we had to use JavaScript to modify everything. And they're like, well, what's this jump thing? And they started calling it the hitch, and I just wanted to kick
Why
in the
hitch?
Face.
That doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't,
that.
Because they're assholes. It was like,
it flashes, basically.
The kind of design that I've given your unbelievably old system because of the power of JavaScript. And then they're like, hey, this jumps. And so what I found is that I hide everything until the JavaScript's transdone, and then I show it all, and they're like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good. Well, here's some weird behavior. If you use the font loader in Google Chrome, it's going to render the rest of the page, but until the web font has loaded, it's going to display a blank space in place of the text that uses the font. So that it doesn't show a flash, but it's just not going to show it at all. So you're going to see all your fonts come in at the end, which could be a little weird. Firefox displays the text in the default font and then re-renders the text. Apple Safari renders the rest of the page, again, but works just like Chrome because it's WebKit. And Internet Explorer renders the rest of the page, but until web font is loaded, displays a blank space as well. So I don't know how, you know, that's another thing in the cons category for me. You know, put another check in the why not to use this so much. It's just more weirdness in the user experience. And I'm not totally down on this. I've been very intrigued and wanting, you know, I think it's only a matter of time before I do use some font faces here and there, you know, sparingly. But
in 3 years, I think it will be completely common practice. Right. And I think in 3 years it will be no big deal, and I won't be sitting here like the old man saying, dude, it's 25K. You know, and everything will be all hunky dory. But right now it just so my whole thing with and we've talked about it on the show before, Pictos, Drew Wilson's fonts. And he has a great font subset. I bought it, and comes with the web interface or the web font kit. Mm-hmm. And it has all of the different ones, the WOFFs, the true types, there's SVGs, the base 64s, all that shit.
Right.
But it does not work on Android 2.4.3. And I think that's what it is. I think it's 2.4. Let me see.
In that situation, you can't do a fallback font because those are your icons.
Exactly. And I've been using the hell out of it. And I will honestly say that has helped me so much. It's not even funny that I don't think I will ever build an application again without leveraging a font web, a icon font, web mm-hmm. font. Jesus.
Some hieroglyphics in there.
But because it really does. I mean, at any point, I can sit there and I can say, okay, this text, which is a link, it really needs to pop out a little bit more, and it's a mail link, so just use M, and boom, there's my mail icon, right? Luckily, our logo has this symbol in it that has an icon that's designed exactly like it. So I'm able to use that in all sorts of – I'm using it in my print designs. I'm using it on my web. It is absolutely badass. But it doesn't work on Android, and it's driving me crazy because I was so focused on making this application work across all of the smartphones. And it just – Android just falls apart, and I can't find – so anybody who's listening and says, oh, I know why it's not working, please send me a message. Do something to send smoke signals because it's driving me fucking nuts.
Awesome. Let's talk about the sizes of these. You know, we'll get into some of the other alternatives here and how big are their font libraries. How's that sound?
Yeah, that's fine because I think it's too heavy right now.
What do you mean too heavy?
I think they're too heavy. So, because again, no matter what, if I'm going to use a font, especially for like a body, right? Something that I'm going to be using a lot of, I'm going to want italic, I'm going to want bold. Right. And just those two alone, I'm looking at maybe 100K.
I think you use these types of custom fonts for very specific sets of text where you can use that text equals. I think that's key.
Yeah, I see, but that's more work than I really care. And if that's the case, then I'm just going to do the image replacement and just overflow hidden and throw my text so far to the left that it doesn't show up, and I get the SEO value for the most part.
Yep.
So if I'm going to use a font, I want to be able to use the fuck out of it. I want to use that thing in all of these different spots.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I can see that if you've got a good font that you want to use, it's like, some like paragraphs of text, and I'm not sure I would personally want to use a custom font for that, because I think Helvetica and Arial accomplish that pretty well, or Sans Serif on Linux, but you could do it.
So Christian Anderson and Associates, they've been using, I think they use Typekit, because I've now been involved in about four of their different, giving, showing them people who can design their designs.
And for people that don't know, they're a big, well-known design firm here in Indianapolis.
Yeah,
and so they're very design-focused. So fonts are going to be important to people like that.
Yeah, so they leverage a lot of Typekit and really high quality, Type Foundry style body text. And it looks great. It really does. But again, so Typekit doesn't work on this Android version that we're talking about. The only one that does seem to work is Font Squirrel, which is another one, doesn't work. And Font Squirrel even lets you upload your own fonts and have it automatically converted to web fonts.
Yes.
And they don't work on this build of Android, or for the 2.4.3, and I think others as well.
Which is an old version of Android, by the way.
They're
at like 4.0, aren't they? With Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yes, but how many phones are out there? Again, we can get into the whole fragmentation conversation.
Yep.
Because I can't tell you how many students have come up to me and said, "Hey, what's this?" And I'm looking at it. I'm like, 97845. Oh shit! And it finally dawns on me, it's not working.
Yeah.
that's been a thorn in my side recently. If you can't tell,
you should contact Drew Wilson about that. The guy who makes Pictus.
I did, and unfortunately, Drew is a hell of a designer.
Uh huh.
But I don't know how well of a customer service person he is.
He's got so much going on, too.
Yeah, whatever. Right? Okay. I mean, I've emailed him now on a few points, like one where my order completely failed when I first bought it.
Oh, no.
I mean, just completely bombed after I paid, and I never got anything. I never heard anything back. So
that's a bummer.
Yeah, nonetheless, love his work. I love you, Drew, but you suck at customer service. And that's okay, because you're an artist, and so fucking what, right?
Right. Okay, so what I meant by size, number of fonts in the libraries.
Oh.
Let's talk about number of fonts. So we've got Google Font Service, which has 400-plus fonts to choose from, many of which, as Brandon said, are pretty pitiful, good to laugh at, not something you'd probably realistically use.
Unless you use Lobster. Everybody go out there and start using Lobster. Lobster is the sickest font you've ever seen. Use it for use it for body text. Use it for headlines. Great.
Let's start a new website. Lobster's the new Comic Sans. And have
Lobster
Let's try to get that as a trending hashtag on Twitter. It'd be amazing. Then you've also got Typekit. It was pretty impossible for us to figure out how many are on Typekit.
It looks like, though, the biggest type foundries are the ones who are using Typekit.
Right. Yes, the really reputable foundries. Yeah. If that's important to you, as I would think it probably would be if you're really caring about custom fonts, they've got it locked up. They got recently acquired by Adobe, so I imagine that most of Adobe's library is probably available through Typekit as well now.
Yeah.
So that's huge. No wonder a lot of design firms want to use Typekit.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you really care about custom fonts like this, just go pay the whatever it is, $9.99 a month.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So they do have a free plan for Typekit, which is kind of cool.
And how many fonts do you get?
You get two fonts.
And you have to include the logo, right?
The Typekit badge is required. You get 25,000 page views per month and two fonts per site. So what if you want to pay and not have to show that? Well, that's $25 per year. I was surprised by how low this was. I figured it, you know, I remembered when their pricing was much higher than this. 25 a year seems pretty minimal. That only goes up to 50,000 page views per month, though, and that's two websites, five fonts per site, but it does support SSL, which is great. Even the free version supports SSL. I hate when they use SSL as a way to promote pain. I don't like that. And then if you do need to go up from there, portfolio for most sites is probably going to be more than adequate. That's 500,000 page views a month, unlimited websites, unlimited fonts per site, SSL, full library access, which the personal only had personal library access, whatever that means, and it's $50 per year, $4 a month, so very affordable for that. And fast, because they do have their own custom content delivery network for those fonts, just like what I imagine Google is doing. So other ones, Font Squirrel, like you mentioned, Brandon.
Yeah.
I actually got to hear that guy talk and talk to him over breakfast at last year's ValioCon, which was kind of cool. And he does Font Squirrel and Font Spring. And this guy's a huge advocate of fonts on the web. So, you know, he makes fonts, and Font Squirrel is commercially free fonts, and he specifically made it to solve that problem of the licensing issue. So, sure, there's Font Face, but what am I going to use? There are no good fonts to put up on my site. And looking through those fonts, I think they actually look, I mean, a lot of them look pretty good. I think you have a better chance to find a good font there from what I can see than on Google Fonts. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Font Squirrel's cool. I just wish it would work on Android.
They have a generator on there. Have you ever played with a generator?
Yeah, and they look ridiculously bad when I do it.
Do you know why the generator's really there?
Why?
It's for you to do basically what Google Font Service was doing. When you do text equals and subset equals, it's there for you to create a compact version of just what you're going to want to use.
Logos.
I'll use it for logos.
I wonder if you could do it. Well, you could probably do it with a logo.
But you could take out like the weird stuff. I mean, if you open these character maps for some of these fonts, they have so many things in there you're never going to want to use. So you can trim the size down. If you're never going to use italic, you know, I don't use italic on sites. I don't really use italic anywhere, so I would take that out. you can trim it up. You know,
I don't use Z anywhere. Yeah. I never will use the letter Z.
I'm against the letter Z. I use 24 letters in the alphabet, and that's it. But you can use the generator to create exactly the font package you want. Even cooler, and he was going through this in the presentation, is that you could create combinations. You could take your A from one font, your B from another. Now, that's getting a little crazy, but you could do it if you want. You could make your own font by generating it from your character map from various fonts. Or a better example probably would be if you like how the lowercase letters look in one font and something that's fairly similar, but you actually like how the uppercase letters look in a different font, then you could do that. Maybe it's a weight difference. You could do bold for your uppercase and normal for your lower. Come up with whatever you want. Use the generator to create that. It's all going to be free for commercial use. I think that's pretty cool. You will have to host that somewhere, though. You know, unlike Typekit and Google Web Service, the web font service, you're going to have to put it up on a CDN or your own personal server where your app is hosted wherever and pull it from there. So it may be a little bit slower than if you have a full content delivery network delivering that.
Yeah, but there's content delivery network launches every damn week, it seems.
True.
Like.
And you, like we talked about last week, you could probably use Cloudflare, and maybe you know, their CDN stuff should automatically pick that up and start.
And it does. It saved me a shitload of bandwidth so far.
Yeah. So use the CDN.
And same with, have you played around with Amazon's CloudFront?
I haven't, but I'm planning on. That's the one I'm looking at. I've read some benchmarks comparing it to Rackspaces, and I think CloudFront is the one that I want to use.
It's pretty it's insane how simple it is. It's like pick your bucket and boom, here's your URL.
Yeah, I like it. FontSpring is commercial, but you have to pay for them, and they're a little bit higher quality. Looks like the size of fonts on here, or the number of fonts, is anywhere in the hundreds. It's kind of hard to tell. Price ranges from $20 into the hundreds. So some good stuff to look at there. And then lastly, rounding out our comparison is fonts.com. They have hundreds of fonts on there. They have the new Helvetica font, which is, I would never take a second look at the site because I think it looks atrocious. But they have new Helvetica, which is really cool that you could license that for using on your website. So no, the reason I say that is because I really like designing for Helvetica, and I like new Helvetica a little bit better. And that's about as far as my font preferences go right there. I'm not a typography nerd or anything, but I like new Helvetica. But I hate the idea that my site, and this sounds weird, but I hate the idea that my site renders in Arial on Windows when I just use my standard font families. Yeah. And so it might be worth paying $20, because there is a little slight size difference between Arial and Helvetica or new Helvetica. And so if I've got everything just right, for $20 a year, or, you know, the, whatever it's costing to do that, and we can talk about pricing here in just a second on fonts.com, but they to know that I have new Helvetica displaying on all browsers, on all OSs, is actually kind of attractive. That's the one font that I could see using pervasively throughout a website.
Yeah.
So I liked that. And pricing here is, they have a free plan, 25,000 page views per month. They have over 3,000 fonts available, so there's the size. Unlimited websites, unlimited fonts per site. That's kind of cool. Then it goes up to $10 for a quarter of a million page views per month, and then $100 for 2.5 million. And this is monthly, by the way. So probably
I would need that one for all my properties.
Yeah, that's a little steep. This looks like the most expensive one out of them all, unfortunately. If it were $10 a year, I think that would become much more of a no-brainer for me, to just use Helvetica new Helvetica everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've talked about a lot of these services and the prices for them, but the tough thing is and as we've talked about a lot already, how do you find a good font out of these huge libraries of tons of fonts, right? A lot of them are these free libraries, but they're full of junk fonts. How are you going to find a good one? Like, how do you find your fonts in these things when you do use them?
So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll go to dafont.com, dafont.com.
Yes.
And I'll just throw in whatever I'm trying to find, you know, whether it's the name of the company or whatever I'm trying to achieve, and just scroll through, like, you know, 500-600 fonts just to see if any of them really stand out. And then I go back and I say, okay, Helvetica new. Or Helvetica or Arial. And then I just move on with my day.
These are desktop fonts, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't end up using any of them. And every time I want to, every time I want to work on my blog, I'm like, I'm going to find a good body font. And I never do. And it's like, you know what? It really isn't that important that the end user, as long as they can read it, then really they don't care. As long as it's not like white text on a black background. And really, you know, a sans serif font, then I know I'm okay.
This might sound like a tangent, but it's related. I was listening to a Mixergy episode earlier this week, and the guy from Tether.com was the one I was listening to. And Andrew Warner, who does Mixergy, was asking him, have you guys spent time trying to optimize the design of your website? And he actually referenced the fact that some well-known designer had actually talked about the design of their website and proposed some changes and maybe even done a mock-up for it. And he's like, I noticed that you didn't end up applying much or any of that. Why is that? And he basically said, I think our time is much better spent trying to perfect our product, which happens to be a tethering application for Android and BlackBerry so that you can tether that to your laptop and get internet connection. But he said that's what we spend our focus. That's what we focus our time on versus figuring out exactly what color we should make something on the website, because we think that making a better product is going to lead to many more sales than slightly higher conversion rate because of a button being sexier or the font being different, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, and I think that bleeds back into this comes back into this conversation is, you know, if you're at the point where you're using font faces, you're either doing it for your own satisfaction.
Yep.
You know, or you're doing it because it is how you're going to show your logo instead of an image or something like that. But if you're spending a lot of time on it, I mean, it's probably not going to convert. It's probably not going to give you a high impact like you might think it will.
Yeah, I'll challenge you. As a matter of fact, I'll lay down the challenge of do an A-B test, right? Do an A-B test of what kind of conversions happen differently between font A and font B versus a normal font, just like 8 times the size of normal, right? If you make a button frigging ginormous, you're going to see a huge difference compared to changing the body font.
Did you get that from another Mixergy?
No, I know which one you're talking about. Yeah. And yeah, he had the same thing where he talked about the buttons. No, I actually, this comes from our own test that we did in e-commerce.
Excellent.
Yeah. So and so it just really reconfirmed that, you know, the font really doesn't matter, but what does matter is how big the damn button is.
Right.
I mean, we're talking like 45 pixel font size.
Yeah. So we need to wrap this up. Let's finish up with a quickly, how do you find good fonts? And then let's recommend which font service to use if you do want to do one of these.
If you want a really good font, go to Typeface or Typekit.
But that's a huge library. How do you find them?
You don't. You have to literally type in kind of what text you're thinking you're going to have and scroll through which ones you like. I mean, the same thing that you would do for when you're creating a logo or if you're creating, you know, trying to pick your overall branding style. There isn't going to be one font that everybody's going to like. You know, so much of it is a personal preference or, you know, like what Apple did with Myriad and Myriad Pro. Right. And, you know, so it really is such a subjective preference to what font you want that I don't think we could come up with a good way to tell you how to go find a good font. You know, it literally is finding. And that's the thing is most technologists, you don't know how to pick a good font. So just pick the font that everybody already is using who knows what they're doing. Just copy them.
Well, and that's a perfect segue into here's one of the ways you can find good fonts. It's a email newsletter called Kernest. That's Kernest. And they send out this newsletter that you actually have to pay to subscribe to. It looks like it's $100 a year. But what they're going to do is figure out pairings. They're going to delivers an amazing font combination to your email inbox each month. And some months were inspired by a powerful essay. Other months were inspired by the shapes and letter forms of the fonts. The 3 to 5 fonts we select from our growing library of more than 1,500 fonts are fully optimized and licensed for web use. So they're just going to ship them right to your inbox, and they're going to do all that curation for you, which I think is an interesting way of doing it. So you don't have to go out to any of these services. You don't have to wade through all of the hundreds that they have. These guys are just going to do that work for you. Now, it does come with a price. And I already can hear what you're thinking there, Brandon. It may not be the email newsletter you would want to sign up for, but I'm imagining.
No, I mean, again, if you're a designer and you're really, really, or a developer and you're really, really concerned about your fonts, other than being schizophrenic, I think that might be a good service to have. But if you're a designer and you're already passionate about fonts, wouldn't you already be curating your own fonts?
Probably. Maybe this is just another signal that you're taking in.
I don't need another signal for $100.
But you're not a typography head either. Some of these guys, like, they get really into this. So, yeah. I don't know. It's not me either, but I figured I found that and I would throw that out there for people that are interested in that. The other one that I would recommend is Beautiful Web Type. This is actually just a simple page up on GitHub, but it looks really nice. And what the guy has done is he's going through the Google Web Fonts directory. He's figuring out which fonts he thinks look nice. And he's creating a really simple HTML page you can just scroll through that shows off those fonts. And the first thing I thought going through this was, wow, this is the best of the best. And there are about, let's see, there's nine fonts out of the 400 plus. I wasn't blown away by some of these at all. And so if I had to pick 9 out of 400 plus, I would hope that I could pick a few better than this. Now, the Beautiful Web Type one that he's using for that, for the title, I think is good. The On the Genealogy of Morals, that font looks pretty nice. But then it quickly, the Edward Tufte one looks bad. I don't like that. And it's good because he shows it in a really huge size, and then he's got some small text as well. But yeah. It looks like you could spend a lot of time going through the Google Web Fonts directory and come up with only a handful of fonts that you're going to want to use. So be prepared for that. So I think this has turned out to be a pretty long podcast, but I've had a lot of fun doing it, covering some good stuff. And Brandon has drank too much wine.
Yes, I have. I'm officially ready for bed.
Yeah, I'm exhausted. This turned into a marathon podcast. But good stuff. So let's wrap it up. The the tease for the next episode is going to be JS widget libraries. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to talk about Kendo UE some, talk about some other cool widgets, widget libraries, jQuery powered and non-jQuery powered. So look forward to that. And thanks for listening.